Thank you very much, Randy, and good morning. Your grain futures on the Chicago Board of Trade finished lower across the board Monday. Corn for September was down 6 to 365. December corn was down 6 and a quarter to 374 and a half. And March corn lost 5 and 3 quarters to 387. September beans were 13 and a quarter cents lower to 854. November beans finished 13 and a quarter lower as well to 866 and a half. And January soybeans lost 13 to 880 and a half. Chicago wheat Monday finished 5 and a quarter cents lower to 465 and a half. December wheat finished 5 cents lower to 472 and a half. And March wheat was down 4 and a half to 479 and a half. September bean meal was down 290 to 292. October bean meal was also down 290 to 293.90. And December bean meal was down 310 to 297.20. Finally, September bean oil finished 45 cents lower Monday to 28.68. October bean oil also was down 45 cents to 28.80. And December bean oil was down 47 to 29.04. So to recap, corn was down 5 and 3 quarters to 6 and a quarter. Soybeans down 13 to 13 and a quarter. Wheat down 4 and a half to 5 and a quarter. Bean meal down 290 to 310. And soybean oil down 45 to 47 cents. Now we'll take you to the Department of Agriculture in Springfield to recap Monday's cash grain report.
This is Monday's reported grain price return for Purvey, Illinois, Department of Agriculture. Illinois country grain prices are lower on Monday afternoon. Beneficial rains for corn and soybean plants are not beneficial for corn and soybean values today. In northern West Illinois country, Indians quoted shell corn bids 5 to 6 cents lower, 325 to 364. Soybean bids are down 14 to 17 cents at 776 to 819. In central Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids 6 cents lower at 350 to 374. Soybean bids are down 15 to 20 cents at 809 to 830. In the southern part of the state, shell corn bids were 3 to 6 cents lower at 329 to 392. Soybean bids are down 12 to 13 cents at 809 to 847. And wheat bids were 5 cents lower at 425 to 466. Illinois soybean processors cash soybean bids were 8 to 13 cents lower at 839 to 872. Basis is unchanged, up 5 at 2800 to 5 over the November. iPro soybean meal on a truck basis offered at 282 to 297 a ton, down $2.90 a ton, with basis steady at 1000 to 5 over the September. Illinois corn processor cash corn bids were 6 cents lower at 377 to 393. With basis unchanged at 12 over to 28 over the September. Illinois River Barge Living Elevated quoted to produce the corn bid 6 cents lower at 325 to 375. With basis steady at 40 under to 10 over the September. Soybeans ended down 10 to 13 cents at 828 to 839. With basis unchanged up 3 at 39 under to 28 under the November. New crop wheat prices were down 5 cents at 416 to 427. Basis was steady at 50 under to 39 under the September. And the East St. Louis Barge Loading Terminal's place, their producer corn bid 6 to 8 cents lower at 355 to 360. These elevators lowered their soybean prices 13 cents, quotations at 860 to 861. Wheat prices were down 5 cents at 867 to 868. And Milo ended today 6 cents lower at 409 to 410. Contract bids producers for October and November delivery corn in the northern part of the state at 318 to 365, soybeans at 801 to 837. In the central part of the state, corn for October and November delivery at 347 to 369, soybeans at 807 to 851. And in the southern part of the state, corn for October and November delivery at 311 to 385, soybeans at $8 to 837. And that concludes our report. This is David Humphreys with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Monday's livestock futures finished higher across the board on the Mercantile Exchange. August live cattle gained 27 cents Monday to $100.20. October live cattle gained 17 to $98.22. And December live cattle gained 20 to $103.72. August feeder cattle gained $1.10 to $135.67. September feeders gained 45 to $132.82. In October, feeders were up 32 cents to $133.17. Finally, October lean hogs gained $2.02 to $64.02. December lean hogs gained 207 to 62.85, and February hogs gained $1.70 to 69.72. So to recap, live cattle gained 17 to 27 cents, feeders gained 32 cents to $1.10, and lean hogs gained $1.70 to $2.07. Now we'll take you back to the Department of Agriculture in Springfield to recap Monday's Cash Livestock Report.
This is the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Monday Afternoon Livestock Report. Starting with the National Daily Direct Hog Report, calculations for 200-pound pork carcass trade 11 cents lower. In a range of 59 to 72.50 with a weighted average carcass price of 69.71. From the Illinois Direct Sow Report, slaughter sow price were $3 lower with moderate to good demand for heavy offerings. U.S. 1 and 3 grade sows under 400 pounds traded 30 to 35. 4 to 5 weighted 34 to 40. 5 to 6 weighted 36 to 44. And over 600 pounds, $37 to $45. In the Illinois Direct Hog Trade, prices for barrels and gilts country buying points were steady, with moderate demand for moderate offerings ranging from $41 to $49. Receipts for Illinois barrels and gilts have totaled 20,700. In the direct cattle trade, in the National Daily Direct Slaughter Cattle Report, choice steers and live bases traded at 108 to 109. Choice heifers and live bases traded at 109. From the National Daily Pork Plant Report, trading for retail and processing cuts was established with 209 loads traded. Calculations for 200-pound pork carcass was $84.98, which was $1.28 lower. From the National Box Beef Cutout Report, values for choice and select beef carcasses are trading higher. Choice carcasses were $239.13, which is 44 cents higher, while select carcasses are $214.52, which is $1.26 higher. The estimated daily slaughter under federal inspection, cattle slaughter was estimated 115,000 compared to 115,000 last week, 117,000 one year ago. Hog slaughter was estimated at 472,000 compared to 458,000 last week and 446,000 one year ago. That concludes our livestock report. This is David Humphreys with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And to start off in Ag News for part two on this Tuesday morning, the Pro Farmer Crop Tour is underway. Joel Penderwood reports from the east leg of the tour.
The 2019 Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour kicks off today for its 27th year of taking a look at the nation's crops through boots on the ground work. Scouts will be crisscrossing the United States all this week. And with the delayed planting season for much of the Corn Belt, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady says this year sure to be an interesting one, especially for those on the eastern leg of the crop tour.
Well, I think the eastern Corn Belt obviously is the major issue this year. Areas of Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois really struggled. And so we are going to see crops probably like we've never seen before. With that said, it's also not a barren wasteland across all that area. There will be crops to sample. We will sample them. It's going into fields, taking measurements, and reporting what the average of those is coming out of the field.
And the eastern leg kicks off this week, traveling west from Columbus, Ohio to central Indiana, an area hit hard with prevented plant acreage.
Our best number at the end of the week when we get done with the crop tour, we'll pull roughly 1,400 corn samples, and the average of those 1,400, so basically turning the Corn Belt into one big field, is going to be our best number. Always is and always will be.
Grady says the big unknown in this year's tour is crop maturity. As one farmer put it, the calendar says it's mid-August, but the crops in the eastern Corn Belt tell us it's mid-July.
We know going into it that's the number one issue. We also know going into it that our corn yield formula works better when you have a more mature crop. It's still the same process that it is every year, even though we're delayed this year and the crop's way more immature. It's a fact-finding mission. It's ground truthing. Happens the third full week in August, and we do it the same with the same process and the same formulas and everything every year. At the end of the week, when Pro Farmer puts our estimates on the crop, they are, honest to gosh, what we believe those crops will end up at as the final estimate from USDA.
Plus, USDA National Agricultural Statistics Services Crops Branch Chief Lance Honig tagging along, Grady says, a testament to the tour's impact.
He's the head of crops at NAS, and, you know, they put these numbers together. So he wants to be fully transparent on what they're doing. And we've had NAS's the head of their corn number and the head of their soybean number that have gone on tour for many years. They participate. They actually are out in the field sampling and stuff along with us through the week. But this year, in addition, Lance will be in Nebraska City on Tuesday. He will be in Iowa City on Wednesday, and then he'll be at the finale in Rochester where both the Eastern and Western groups meet up together on Thursday.
And follow along with what the scouts are seeing all this week online at profarmer.com. Plus, follow the conversation on social media at hashtag PFTour19. I'm Joel Penorwood.
A preliminary hearing for tampering with a motor vehicle charge is scheduled next month for Garland Nelson of Missouri. The northwestern Missouri farmer admitted to authorities that he took the rental truck of two missing Wisconsin ranchers and abandoned it in a parking lot in mid-July. Human remains were found on Nelson's farm a couple of weeks ago, but have not been identified. No other charges have been filed. Nelson is the only named suspect in the disappearance of Nick and Justin Diemel, who went to visit Nelson's farm regarding cattle they owned in his care. Other farmers who have done business with Nelson admitted they feared he could hurt others, and several stories have surfaced regarding his lack of care for the animals. In a recorded phone call with Kansas rancher, Nelson mentioned he had no money to pay borrowers and may have to resort to turning a gun on himself or someone else to remedy his situation. Nelson was previously sentenced for 2 years in prison for cattle fraud. In other news from Missouri, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has transitioned to recovery support along the Missouri River Basin in ongoing repairs, which include closing or repairing breaches where most infrastructure and population centers are at risk. Teams are accessing and refining damage assessments to the 850 miles of impacted levees within the region of the Omaha and Kansas City District. Judd Conevan is Chief of Emergency Management from the Kansas City District of the Army Corps of Engineers. He says to date, the Kansas City District Levee Rehab Team has received a total of 105 requests for levee rehabilitation assistance.
For the period March 2019 to present, 66 levee systems in the public law 8499 rehabilitation inspection program were overtopped. 45 of those levee systems were subsequently breached. To date, we have submitted 34 project information reports for approval by higher headquarters. 5 amended reports have also been submitted for approval, and 18 project information reports have been approved.
The entire levee rehabilitation effort for the Missouri River Basin has been estimated at $1 billion, without additional expenses expected as requests for assistance and damage assessments continue. Conevan says the repairs are contingent on river conditions and heavy rainfall.
With the number of levee systems that were damaged, it's going to take us a considerable amount of time to get levees repaired. Areas behind the damaged levees will remain vulnerable to flooding for the foreseeable future. Please continue to pay attention to watches and warnings issued by the National Weather Service. Conditions on the river can change quickly should that heavy rainfall return to our region.
And wet weather over the past weekend and more storm systems this week are expected and are troublesome for their efforts. The active August weather pattern has prompted flood warnings to return as the levee repairs continue. Moving on into national livestock news, a recent fire at a large Kansas beef processor has boosted margins for other processors. The Tyson Foods facility in Holcomb, Kansas, represents about 5% of the U.S. daily slaughter, or roughly 6,000 head of cattle. The fire has closed the facility indefinitely as Tyson makes repairs. Reuters says the fire spiked margins for packers such as Tyson, Cargill, and JBS USA to $344 per head of cattle slaughtered, up from $153 the week before the fire. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association responded last week, sending letters to federal watchdogs and agencies urging them to assist the market and closely monitor sales. In order to compensate for the loss of capacity at Holcomb, NCBA says major packing plants in Texas, Kansas, Colorado, Nebraska, and Iowa will need to slaughter 8.2% more cattle per week or run 3.3 more hours per week. Department of Agriculture Undersecretary Greg Ibaugh says that as the cattle industry adjusts, the USDA stands ready to assist our customers however we can. In other national livestock news, nearly 17,000 dairy producers have signed up for the new Dairy Margin Coverage Program. The Department of Agriculture yesterday reported the data with a reminder the sign-up period closes in about a month on September 20th. The program offers protection to dairy producers when the difference between the all milk price and the average feed cost, known as the margin, falls below a certain dollar amount selected by each individual producer. USDA Undersecretary Bill Northey calls the enrollment data encouraging, but says we are hopeful that we will get more folks in the door. To date, more than 60% of dairies with established production histories have enrolled in the program. Wisconsin has seen the most participants with more than 4,800 dairy operations, followed by Minnesota, New York, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. USDA's Farm Service Agency began issuing program payments to producers on July 11th. Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue at the time called the choice to sign up a no-brainer, as the retroactive coverage through January has already assured that 2019 payments will exceed the required premiums. And sticking with the topic of dairy, we'll move on to a more local story. Family mealtime has been lost in our overscheduled lives, and for many families, school work schedules and extracurricular activity can make it difficult to find time to eat together. And some families go days or even weeks without sitting down as a family to share a meal. However, family meals are important and should be considered as part of our daily routine. Here to share why eating meals as a family is important and how dairy foods should be part of those meals is Jill Williams, a registered dietitian and nutrition educator with the St. Louis District Dairy Council. How does eating meals together bring families together?
So research has shown recently that, really what we've known all along, that sharing a family meal is really good for our spirit and our brain and the health of all of our family members. There are studies that actually link regular family dinners with behaviors like lower rates of substance abuse, higher grade point averages, and self-esteem. It also suggests that when a family eats together, they feel a really strong bond with each other. And it just really allows you time to reconnect with your family. It can also be better for your budget. So, eating at home obviously is going to be a little bit cheaper than eating out and that sort of thing. But it's just important to bring the family together.
And another thought I had too, it also kind of forces more face-to-face conversation.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Better communication, and it might be the only time that you really get to sit down and talk to your kids. Everyone just has such busy lives and schedules. So it's just a nice time to sit down and ask each other about your day and to talk to each other.
So when we have the chance to sit down and have a meal, do those families that eat at home have a healthier diet?
Yes, definitely. Families that cook at home have healthier options than fast foods or restaurants. Studies show that kids and teens who eat more meals at home consume more calcium-rich dairy foods. They consume more fruits and vegetables. They drink less soda. They eat fewer fried foods. Also, cooking and eating at home increases that opportunity to get those three servings of dairy a day. So, parents are really modeling those good behaviors. So if kids see their parents eating healthy or drinking milk or eating fruits and vegetables, they're more likely to do those things as well.
Mm-hmm. And by having that healthier diet, that has to have some short-term health benefits as well.
That's right. Regular family meals lower the rates of obesity in children and adolescents. It also encourages kids to try new and healthy foods, especially if you involve them in the meal preparation and the serving process. I know with my daughter, whenever I let her, she loves to cook. She loves to help me and just be with me in the kitchen. So if she helps me prepare something, she's a lot more likely to try it. She can be a little bit of a picky eater, but, if she helped make it, then she usually is going to try it as well, which is good. And, kids aren't eating a bunch of junk food when they're cooking a meal at home.
And then long-term health benefits as well kind of couple with that is also if it continues to be a tradition.
That's right. So, learning to cook and participate in those regularly scheduled meals is a skill that your kids can learn for the rest of their lives. you know, there's lots of kids that go off to college or, you know, leave the house and they have no idea how to how to cook anything.
Ramen noodles.
Yeah, exactly. Because they've never cooked before. Or even, you know, kids that are out of college don't know how to cook. And so, you know, they just start eating out and things like that and not having those healthy diets. So it is a great skill that they can learn. And kids that learn to eat healthy as children are more likely to eat healthier as adults as well. That kind of carries into adulthood. So, you know, just eating at home is going to ensure more control over kids getting that balance in their diet and getting those 2 to 3 servings a day of dairy foods.
And why would dairy be the great addition to the dinner plate from a health perspective?
Well, of course, dairy is delicious, but it is, like you said, it's it packs a great punch nutritionally. Every serving of dairy is going to provide at least 30% of our calcium needs. It also contains 9 essential nutrients that our body needs, so not only calcium, but also protein, vitamin A, B12, vitamin D. There's all kinds of nutrients in there that are important for us. And I love that dairy is a great source of protein, especially as a mom. You know, my daughter, sometimes I can't get her to eat meat very often or things like that. But she loves dairy foods. And, you know, so I know if she's eating, you know, if she's drinking milk and she's eating, you know, cottage cheese and yogurt and cheese, that she's getting that protein that she needs. So I don't have to worry as much.
Mm-hmm. And especially in chocolate milk, most kids, they love chocolate milk.
Absolutely.
Sneak that in there.
Yeah, get those good nutrients that they need.
So why would dairy foods be a great addition to meals in terms of the flavor, especially as we were talking about a picky eater?
Mainly just because there's so many choices. So there's lots of variety. You know, if you look at yogurt, I mean, there's like a whole wall of yogurt in the grocery store. There's so many different flavors. There's so many different varieties. There's regular yogurt and Greek yogurt and French style yogurt and, you know, so many different varieties now and flavors and tastes. So if you can't find something that you like, it's, you know, it's, you're not looking hard enough, I guess. And there's over 300 variety of cheeses. So there's just lots of opportunities to try different flavors, different consistencies. And, you know, it's really easy just to add dairy into a recipe. You know, something with just a few ingredients to get that calcium in those dairy servings.
And as we wrap up here, Jill, you always have some good information and some recipes on the website and other links to for more information for folks. So where can they go to get all that good information?
They can always check out our website. It's www.stldairycouncil.org. And like you said, we have new recipes on there every month. And lots of information, especially if you're a teacher, if you're going back to school, we have tons of resources for teachers and free stuff. So definitely check out our website. You can look us up on Facebook and Instagram. If you just type in STL Dairy Council, you can find our pages and you can like us. On Facebook or Instagram, we post lots of pictures of things that we're doing out in the community. And, you know, our different initiatives that we have going on. And you can always email us at info@stldairycouncil.org if you have questions.
All righty, Jill. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that was Jill Williams, registered dietitian and nutrition educator with the St. Louis District Dairy Council. Now let's move on to State of Illinois Ag News. And we have the latest crop progress and condition report from a fairly wet week in our local area. So for that, we'll join Mark Sloysener with the National Ag Statistics Service in Springfield.
Last week was wetter than normal over most of the state, and temperatures were slightly above average. Rainfall totals range from just under 1 inch to nearly 3 inches around Illinois. Overall, the state average rainfall was 1.55 inches last week, 2/3 of an inch above normal. Temperatures averaged 75 degrees, which is 1 degree above normal. There was an average of 5.4 days suitable for field work, and topsoil moisture levels were reported as 11% very short, 40 short, 47 adequate, and 2% surplus. That is considerably wetter than 1 week ago. Growing degree days accumulated since May 1st are now above average in all parts of the prairie state. The Illinois soybean crop is now blooming on 89% of acres compared to 100 last year and 98% for the five-year average. 67% of acres are setting pods compared to 88 normally. The condition of the Illinois soybean crop was reported as 20% of acres in very poor to poor condition, 40% fair, and also 40% in good to excellent condition. That is slightly better than 1 week ago. Corn has reached the dough stage on 55% of acres. That compares to 93% 1 year ago and 88% normally. Corn in the dent stage reached 12% compared to the five-year average of 43%. The condition of the Illinois corn crop was rated as 19% very poor to poor, 39% fair, and 42% good to excellent, also a little better than 1 week ago. Moving over to hay, the second cutting of alfalfa hay is 96% finished compared to 99% normally, and the third cutting of alfalfa hay is 57% finished compared to 67% normally. Pasture conditions were rated 28% very poor to poor, 45% fair, and 27% good to excellent. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
Moving on into other state ag news, the Illinois State Fair wrapped up Sunday, and the grandstands set records for tickets sold and gross revenue. State Fair Manager Kevin Gordon says that even without an official tally of how many fairgoers entered the grounds, he says many of the vendors were happy.
Two of them came in yesterday just to shake my hand and say thank you. One of the gentlemen said, you know, they've been here for, you know, close to 30 years, and he thinks it's the best weekend, first weekend of sales that he's ever had at the Illinois State Fair.
The fair should be releasing official attendance numbers in about a week. And moving on now into local ag news, we have the latest Greenville Livestock Auction results from their last sale on Wednesday, the 14th. There were 625 total receipts, 549 in cattle, 76 in sheep and goats. On the cattle side of things, slaughter steers and heifers traded $7 to $9 lower on high choice and $8 lower on low choice and selects. Holstein steers traded $1 lower on the high choice and $1 to $2 lower on low choice and selects. Feeder steers and heifers traded steady on the medium-large 1 to 2s and $1 to $5 lower on the unvaccinated, unweaned to short-weaned calves and the medium-short 2 to 3s. Slaughter cows traded steady to $2 to $3 lower on the better cows and $2 to $4 lower on slower cows. The slaughter bulls traded unevenly steady. And remember to catch the full report. You can find it on our website at WSMIRadio.com. And now in local events going on in the area, don't forget that tomorrow will be the Illinois Summer Wheat Forum, which again will be held tomorrow, August 21st. At the Oakville Community Center in Oakville. Registration will be on site and begin at 8 a.m. The sessions begin at 9. The forum will conclude about 3 in the afternoon and lunch will be included. Registration fees for Illinois Wheat Association members will be $20. The general public may attend for $40. Certified Crop Advisor credits are also available. For more information and an agenda, you can visit the Illinois Wheat Association website at illinoiswheat.org, or call Mike Doherty, the interim executive director of the Wheat Association, at 309-557-3268. Also happening tomorrow will be an interagency meeting at the Montgomery County Extension Office. That meeting begins tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. And that just about wraps it up for this Tuesday morning edition of the Ag Show. But remember, if you have any ag news that you'd like to have aired here on the morning or afternoon ag shows, you can email that to us at WSMI@WSMIRadio.com. So for this Tuesday morning, August 20th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting for WSMI Ag News.